things actually work, huh?
Do the job. Randaf Yud Aleph up with Beis. I want to spend a few minutes continuing our discussion from last time regarding the Birkos HaTorah, the 2/3 brachas that we have of Birkos HaTorah. So first of all, again, just to bring together what we were actually discussing last time, I just want to really just briefly sum up what we discussed, what we ended the shiur with last time, and that's the Bach, the etc. of Torah Lishma. The bottom line is like this. The purpose of Torah, and this basically, this everybody agrees on, the purpose of Torah is to become a vehicle of Hashem and His Torah in this world. In other words, Zohar tells us, Yisrael, Ve'oraisa, Ve'kudcha, Ve'richu, Chad. Yisrael, the Torah, and Hashem are all meant to be one. Meaning, Hashem manifests Himself through His Torah. The Torah is not just how to live in this world. The Torah is Hashem's thought process, kiviyachol. Any physical manifestations of Torah are superficial representations of much deeper concepts. The world was created because Hashem wanted Torah, which is His value system, to actually play out in a physical way. That is our purpose. Therefore, by learning Torah, we actually are connecting with Hashem's will, which is connecting with Hashem, and then we play it out by actually fulfilling it, thus becoming vehicles of Hashem's will, or of Hashem, in this world. That, we turn our personality, we align our personalities with Hashem by learning Torah, right? By just fulfilling Torah, you're fulfilling. But by learning Torah and developing the Torah values, developing the Torah mentality, you're actually aligning your personality with Hashem, which in other words is merging it with Hashem, connecting it to Hashem. And that's why a few of the expressions that the Bach used that seem like flowery expressions are actually very precisely intended. He said the idea was for each Jew to become a conduit of Hashem, a conductor of Hashem in this world, and the whole world would shine with the glory of the Shekhinah. Now let's understand that that's not just a poetic term. It means something very literal. Beis HaMikdash, we know, Kais HaMarovi, right? Beis HaMarovi is the remnant that we have of a Beis HaMikdash that's not there. Everybody knows that that's a place where the Shekhinah is present. You go there, you're close to Hashem, speak to Hashem, etc. Right? But actually, we're told, the Bach says, Nefesh HaChaim, etc., etc., etc. Everybody says that really the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is what each Jew is supposed to be. You bring Hashem into yourself. You bring Hashem into yourself, and then each Jew is a Beis HaMikdash. Each Jew is a Mishkan. Now, the what is the effect of this? Imagine if there was a Kursal Ma'arovi on every street. Okay? Certainly gives you a very great place to go daven each day. But besides that, there's a lot more Shekhinah in the world. Because instead of just having one Kaisel Ma'aravi, which radiates Kedusha all around the world, you have so much more. There's a Kaisel Ma'aravi on every street. There's a lot more Shekhinah in the world in general. The world itself is a greater place of Ashras HaShekhinah, and therefore Tefillah anywhere in the world is much more effective. There's more Shekhinah in the world. That was the idea of the Beis HaMikdash. The idea of the Beis HaMikdash was where the Shekhinah came into the world. When a person fills himself with Torah, he's bringing more Shekhinah into the world. If we wonder why in our generation we don't hear the stories that we hear from 300-400 years ago of miracle workers and tefillahs being answered in much greater ways. So you have to realize at that time when every Jew was learning Torah, there was much more Shekhinah in the world. Now, every Jew who keeps Torah, who learns Torah, every Jew who lives Torah, brings Shekhinah into the world. Well, you're talking percentage-wise, most of the lights are off. They're not shining bechlal. Many of the lights are glimmering or dimish. Each person brings Shekhinah into the world in accordance with how he connects to this whole thing. So yeah, today it's a bit of a weak situation. That's the purpose of learning Torah. Now, here we bring in Reb Chaim Volozhiner's point. This is very important. Reb Chaim Volozhiner says that we have to realize that this doesn't mean that whenever you're learning, you're going to be feeling all this. Because that conflicts with learning. If you're going to be thinking of the great inspirational thoughts while you're learning, you won't be able to focus on your learning. Unless you're learning this sugya. Right? What's that? It's the purpose of learning. It's the purpose of learning. But it's not the way you go about learning. That's what Reb Chaim Volozhiner says.
The purpose of learning is not to be inspired.
Not to be inspired. It's to connect with Hashem. You don't necessarily have to feel that happening. It's not to be inspired. It's not to be thinking, wow, I'm connecting with Hashem. Sometimes a person opens up a beautiful tefillah that was written by somebody of our days, and it really strikes on his heart chords, and he feels like he's connecting with Hashem in a way that he never did. He's very inspired. That's a good thing. But you have to realize that there are ways of connecting with Hashem which you don't even feel it happening. You know, let me just finish the... You don't even feel it happening. This is what Reb Chaim Volozhiner is telling us about Torah. Torah does not have to be an uplifting experience. It's exactly the same as we say, let's say a person is told, you exercise every day, you'll be very fit. So the guy says, are you crazy? I tried it for 3 days. As soon as I finish exercising, I feel wiped. What are you telling me? I feel fit. And the answer is, of course, it doesn't work that way. While you're exercising, you'll feel exhausted. Right? But in the general picture, you're becoming more and more and more fit all the time. Torah sometimes involves getting into non-inspiring, gray, dull, nitty-gritty. What it actually is connecting with Hashem. Hashem might not manifest in this world always in the most inspiring way. We're in this world. We're behind a certain smoke screen. We're dull. We're desensitized. You come to the next world, you really feel it. Just a second. So therefore, Nefesh HaChaim says, if you're going to be looking for inspiration in every learning experience, forget about it. Sit and say Tehillim all day. Tehillim is inspiring, but it's not as great as Torah learning, Reb Chaim stresses. Tehillim is very inspiring. You feel very connected and inspired, but it's not connecting you in the same way that Torah learning does. You learn Torah, you don't necessarily feel it happening. But he says, realize that that is what you're doing. Before you learn, he says, sit down and contemplate these thoughts. Realize that now I am about to cleave to Hashem. I'm about to become screwed with Hashem like this. Right? And you're not necessarily going to feel it when you get into the heavy sugya of Bava Metzia of what a liar could say and what he wouldn't say. But that's what's actually going on. He says, beforehand, sit down, contemplate this, then throw yourself into the learning. Mamish the same as a person who knows what edifice he's trying to build. But when he's busy, dirty, with the cement, he's not busy worrying, why don't I see that edifice? I've been working already for, why don't I see the edifice? Right.
That is revealing Hashem.
Okay.
You're becoming like a chariot of Hashem.
That's right, the chariot of Hashem, a vehicle of Hashem. That's exactly the term, right?
Okay, so but doesn't necessarily mean you're connected to Hashem.
No. This, by definition, is connected to Hashem. What do you mean, chariot of Hashem? You're drawing the Shekhinah into yourself through your learning.
What it means is...
connected consciously or unconsciously. That's the further difference that you're drawing.
It's like you used to say
about... unconsciously.
Oh,
Reb Nissen Alpert, yeah, okay.
So, he used to say, like, you know, if you want to know how Moshe Feinstein holds about something, you can ask Reb Nissen Alpert. He thinks, he's like this. So, like, he revealed, he was a revelation of, like, Reb Moshe Feinstein.
Right.
You go to him and find out what Moshe Feinstein thought.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean that he was connected to Reb Moshe Feinstein when he was making his something
that
he was doing.
Here's where Hashem is different. Because as we discussed before, the Torah is kiviyachol. Hashem not just reveals, when we say reveals himself through the Torah, we don't mean that he gives you an idea of what he's about through the Torah. It means that he is there. It's like we said, Hileshem puts it this way, it's a hard concept to grasp, but he says Hashem's will is not a revelation of Hashem in the sense that it gives you a picture of Hashem. It's a revelation of Hashem in the sense that Hashem is there. When we talk about revelations of Hashem in this sense, we mean revealing as in connecting to the actual thing. Bringing the actual thing forward. So when we're talking about revealing Hashem in this way, what we mean is you are drawing Hashem into yourself and allowing that to shine through. Now you might not feel it. You don't need to feel that in every learning experience. But at the same time, before learning, sit down and contemplate. Now, I'm about to learn a really complicated sugya of Taurus, how an oil works, right? Uninspiring, etc., etc. But that in that I'm connecting to Hashem. In that's where Hashem is. When you open up that sugya, you've opened up a pothole or a window, and Hashem is now spilling into you. Whenever you connect to Hashem's will, you have connected to Hashem. Hashem is in His will. So that's connecting to Hashem. Just you might not feel it.
There's so many ways Hashem's will saturates everything. Where can you be where Hashem's will is not?
The question is if you're connecting to it or not. If it's around you but it's not in you, what good does that do? Point is, when you bring His will into yourself, you have drawn Hashem into yourself. So that's this point. Now, you should work side by side of having that happen in a conscious way also. And that's why, for example, Torah and Tefillah are meant to complement each other. We supplement our Torah with Tefillah. That raises that conscious connection. Torah creates the unconscious connection, but the real connection, the ultimate connection. When you have the Torah and Tefillah working with each other, you're bringing the conscious and the subconscious together, one enhances the other. But the truth is, it's also more than that. Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, and here he adds his point, when you're going about learning Torah, you should be learning Torah just in order to know Torah as well as you can. Because the better you understand it, the stronger, the more solid the connection with Hashem is. So therefore, your whole focus should be, why are you learning? I want to understand this as best as I can. But why do you have that will? Why do you desire to understand it as best as you can? Because you appreciate the fact that that is the strongest and most solid way of connecting to Hashem. It's the greatest means there is.
More than chesed.
More than chesed. Torah is the ultimate, period. It's the greatest way that there is. There are all kinds of other ways. A lot of other ways. 612 other ways. Torah is the greatest way. Getting there soon, yes. Attention?
He wants to be the best in the shir. He's learning to be the best in the shir. He's learning to get a good shit up.
It affects it infinitely. And that's what the Maharal was telling us, and that's what the Bach was telling us, that it makes a very, very big, it makes worlds of a difference. Chazal tells us, mitoch shalei lishma ba lishma, learning shalei lishma has value. But yet, the full effect of the Torah comes when you're learning, appreciating what you're trying to do through the learning. But not necessarily that you're thinking of it while you're learning, but in general, the reason why you make us an endeavor out of learning is because this is what you want out of it. Okay, you know, we'll see this come across in a few more ways. Okay, so now just a couple of more points. That's really just tying up last time's discussion. Now just a couple of more points I want to bring out on this regarding the brachas themselves. That is, so first of all, we have these 2/3 brachas. We're going to call it 3 just because there are 3 themes here. Even if it's 2, there are 3 themes here. There's the aspect of making a bracha on the mitzvah, as we already discussed. Making a bracha on the mitzvah. There's the next part, which is asking Hashem to sweeten it in our mouths. Right? And then there's the last part, which is giving that whole presentation of how Hashem chose us and gave us His Torah, Hashabach Harbon. So, many of the Mepharshim say the following. Many of the Mepharshim say the following. Shkoyach. Okay. So many of the Mepharshim say the following. In different ways. The Maharsha says this, the Pnei Yeshua says it, they express it in different ways. I'll start technically and then explain what we're saying. The Pnei Yeshua says, in general, there are three different types of brachas. Well, there's Birkas HaMitzvahs, bracha that you say on a mitzvah. There's Birkas HaNehenim, bracha that you say when you're about to enjoy something, one of the pleasures of this world. When you eat food, right? And then there's Birkas HaShvach, bracha that you say when you see something wondrous and you praise Hashem for it, right? That's a bracha that you say when you see thunder and lightning, when you see the Mediterranean, right? Three different categories of mitzvahs. We are expressing all three with our Birkas HaTorah. First, we have our Birkas HaMitzvahs, right? Asher Kedushanu B'Mitzvotav V'Tzivanu La'Asoik B'Divrei Torah. Then is the Harevna, Birkas HaNenin. Ultimately, we're supposed to enjoy the Torah. We make a bracha like when you dig into a good steak. Just that since this requires a level, we don't naturally necessarily feel that. It's actually expressed as a tefillah. The Harevna, please sweeten it in our mouths. And the next one is the Birkas HaShvach. We're praising Hashem, expressing how He chose us to be His nation. Now, we'll take this just a little bit of a deeper level with the way the Maharsha puts it. The Maharsha says, there are three types of good in the world. When you say, I'm doing something good, you can mean one of three things. There's good as in the right thing to do. For example, being honest in business. Let's say I'm always honest. That's not necessarily pleasant. Often it's more pleasant to cheat. Right? But it's good. It's the right thing to do. Okay? So that's good number one. Right. Then there's good number two. I'm doing something good might mean I'm doing something fun. Pleasant. Sweet. Eating steak. Okay? That's the second time I'm drawing on steak. I think I'm giving away a little bit of my preferences. But you're eating something good. It's not that I'm doing something right, right? There's something moral about eating a slice of pizza? No. But it's good. It's geschmack, right? That's good number two. Good number three is beneficial. It's good to exercise. That's what we said before. It's good to exercise. What does that mean? That it's moral? It's upright? No, that's not what it means. Does it mean that it's fun? Doesn't mean that either. It means that it's beneficial, right? It's good for you. So those are three goods, right? The right thing to do, the fun thing to do, and the beneficial thing to do. So all these three are extant in Torah, and this is what we are expressing in our three Birkas HaTorah. Are extant in Torah, we have them in Torah, and we're expressing it through these three brachas. And that is as follows. We say, Asher Kedushanu B'Mitzvotav V'Tzivanu, right? This is a bracha on the mitzvah. Just in general, by the way, in order to appreciate what this means, sounds a little technical, you make a bracha on a mitzvah. What's a bracha on a mitzvah? Thank Hashem for giving us the mitzvah. What is the Lashon Tzav? Mitzvah. Ask anybody, what is the root of the word mitzvah? Tzav? Commandment, right? Commandment. Oh, I see you're already... But the truth is that there's something deeper there. Technically, it means commandment. But what's at the deeper level of a command? Tzav, in Hebrew, is also the root of the word tzevet. Tzevet means a company. Like the crew of the plane is called a tzevet. The administration of the school is called a tzevet. Tzevet is a team, that's the word. A team is a tzevet. More literally, it means a connection. People are connected together. When I command you to do something, that expresses that I require a certain connection with you for my purposes. Now, if I have a Filipino, I command her to wash the floor. I need her because I need a clean floor. Right? You might say, Hashem commands us to do mitzvahs because he needs the matzah eaten. Hashem doesn't need clean floors. He doesn't need anything. So there, if he commands us to do something, it's because he needs, so to speak, us. He's interested in the connection. He's interested in the interaction. Any command really expresses that. Anytime I command someone to do something, it means I have an interest in my connection with them. Sometimes it's just for a technical purpose. But with Hashem, where it's not technical and he doesn't need anything, the command is expressing I'm interested in a certain interaction with you. In a relationship. That's it. therefore, what we're actually saying is we are expressing our awe at the privilege of the fact that Hashem is interested in our relating to Him. That's what a mitzvah is in general. And that's what we're saying with Torah. Thanking Hashem for the mitzvah. But let's explain how these three elements manifest in Torah. First of all, there's the right thing to do. Torah is the right thing to do. Everybody knows that. No news there. But there is something new there. Maral says, one of the 48 kinyonim of Torah, meaning one of the 48 ways of acquisition of Torah is, Oyev es hamisharim, a person who loves meisharim, means uprightness. So this doesn't just mean a person who likes justice. The Maral says that what it means is a person who appreciates the justness, is that how you say it, of the Torah. Which means as follows. It's not just that you take it on faith that this is what I should be doing, but you appreciate that this is morally correct. Meaning, when you see a mitzvah, let's say a Torah says don't steal. Everybody appreciates the uprightness of that. Everybody also appreciates the fact that way before anybody else had any concept of human rights, the Torah is commanding you how to deal with slaves. Everybody appreciates the uprightness of the Torah. But the point is that we have to strive to appreciate the uprightness about all the mitzvahs of the Torah. Often there are certain mitzvahs that we have a harder time connecting to. We feel differently about it. We want to work to develop our value system, the way we look at things. Not just that we accept this is what we have to do, but I understand that this is the right thing to do. Like, for example, Torah says that there's capital punishment. It's important for us to appreciate that means that capital punishment is the right thing. It's not that, you know, I grew up in a liberal America. I feel that it's wrong, but the Torah says, so of course we're going to do it. No, you want to strive to appreciate what's right about it. That takes a lot of thought. If the Torah says, other example, people sometimes have a hard time with it. If the Torah says, you see, that eating meat constitutes many mitzvahs in the Torah, that means there's something right about eating meat. It's not just, well, okay, the Torah didn't have the vegetarian sentiments. I do. I feel that it's wrong to me. Eat meat, so I don't eat meat. And of course, I keep the Torah. If I'd be commanded to eat meat, I'd eat it. If I'd be a kohen, I'd eat a shlamet. But I'm not commanded to lemaisa, and I feel that it's wrong. No. If the Torah says that this eating meat is right, that means not just that you're allowed to, it's the right thing to do. You don't understand it? Maybe you have to work to understand it. Well, Kohanim certainly do in many situations. Kohanim certainly do in many situations. On Yom Tov, there may be a chiyuv questionable. There may be a chiyuv of daraisa of eating meat. The question is whether it's daraisa or not. Not so clear. What's that? Right. Karbanis. Well, there's karbanis. There's plenty of such situations. What's that? Yeah, everybody has to eat. And then at least you appreciate that there is nothing wrong with it. Okay. Now, when the Torah said that it should be.
Right.
Once the Torah said that it should be, it's the right thing to do.
What about everyone's built differently. Some people are more squeamish than others.
Squeamish is a different thing. If a person says, I'm nauseous at the thought, that's like, okay, you recognize that you have a weakness, fine. Torah doesn't require you to eat meat, but recognize that it's a weakness. Don't feel noble about it. Don't feel like, when I see other people eating meat, I cluck my tongue. Yeah, I know that the Torah allows it, but a sensitive person really shouldn't. No, say, I have a weakness, I can't handle it, I can't stomach it. I don't like wine either, right? And I don't like mushrooms, and I don't like meat. That's all. As we just said, once the Torah said it was right, it's right. What does the Torah tell us now? So these are just examples, but the point is, we endeavor to understand not just that this is what we have to do, but that this is the right thing to do. In fact, Rav Hirsch has a very, very interesting exposition. He says, people misunderstand. You think that there are mitzvahs that you can't understand. A chayk. You can't understand the chayk. Rav Hirsch says it's not true. Chayk are the mitzvahs that we wouldn't have thought of on our own. Not things that are mandated. But once Hashem told them to us, On the contrary, what every mitzvah is actually a challenge. Go! Discover the profundity of it. Now that Hashem has given you this chayk, study it, try to understand its significance, you'll find your appreciation of Judaism developing. The point is, we're supposed to take each mitzvah not just as a technical obligation, but as a value. Now you don't connect to that value? Study it. Think a little more. Study a little more. Try to connect. Develop your understanding. Each mitzvah is actually a call to develop your understanding, to develop your whole mentality. So that's... What? So this we have to understand also. It said that Shlomo HaMelech got stuck with Paraduma. Yet at the same time, the Chinuch and the Sfarna and Rav Hirsch and many other Sfarna give reasons for the Paraduma. What's the pshat? They figured it out, Shlomo HaMelech didn't? No. That's not what it means. Shlomo HaMelech was saying that he wasn't able to connect to this mitzvah in the way that he did to all of the mitzvahs. No doubt in my mind that he knew what the Sfarna says and what the Chinuch says and what Rav Hirsch says, etc. Just he was saying, whereas with other mitzvahs, I mamish gained much greater level of clarity. Here I didn't. Yeah. Okay. That's the rightness of the Torah. It's right. Then we have the sweetness of the Torah. Right? So here also, many people are going to look at me and say, I feel it. Right? So the truth is, here also, so we've quoted from the Or HaChaim often. Or HaChaim says, if people would feel the sweetness of the Torah, they would go crazy with enthusiasm. Torah is very, very sweet. Though, in our physical body, we might not be able to taste it. What we're doing is, we're drinking it as much as we can. When we do connect with our neshama, put it this way, after death, certainly, we'll all of a sudden experience the unbelievable bliss of all the Torah we've been learning. Right now, we're desensitized. But it's very, very sweet. And the truth is, you can connect to it in this world too, in a diluted way. You can connect it to this world too. When you're learning enough, you can reach a situation, it's not such a high madriga to actually enjoy the learning, and to even become enthralled with it. Not such a high madriga, and it does not, important to stress, it does not conflict with lishma. There's no mitzvah to learn Torah without enjoying it. Eglay Tal says that the more you start enjoying the Torah, the more it means you're really connected. That's sweet. And then the last element is beneficial. It is. That's right. It's an exception. Exception to the extent that the... I think we've mentioned this a few times. Right, that's right. We've mentioned this a few times. The essence of Torah actually is to enjoy it. To work hard on it and to enjoy it, as we'll see soon. And that's why, for example, it's a very interesting halachic implication of this. Maybe we mentioned it. That usually we say mitzvah slav lehonos nitzvah, which means, let's say a person made a neder. I'm not going to benefit from palm trees. Then Sukkot comes. Are you allowed to take a lulav? And the answer is yes. Because fulfilling a mitzvah is not called benefit. Halachically. That's a whole discussion. Halachically, it's not defined as benefit. It's defined as doing a mitzvah. Not to find this benefit. Because it's not called that you enjoy it. Now, if a person made a neder not to use Sfarim, he's not allowed to learn in a sefer. Why? Rabbi Avraham Nahar says, the essence of the mitzvah of Torah is to enjoy it. And therefore, here we don't say mitzvah slav lehotnis nitzvah. The mitzvah is not meant to benefit from. The whole purpose of Torah, the ultimate purpose of Torah, is to enjoy it. And therefore, that is the whole definition. The whole definition of learning Torah is enjoying. And therefore, you're not allowed to use those far. What's that? An even greater level of doing Hashem's will is enjoying doing Hashem's will. Enjoying the connection with Hashem. That's greater level than just connecting. Absolutely. We are meant to enjoy life. To enjoy the privilege of being connected with Hashem. That's the greatest level. That's right? Right? And on the contrary, we say that was the whole time of Shalei Berchu Batera Tchila. They said because of Torah, but they weren't crazy with enthusiasm. And of course, beneficial, we don't have to expound too much. Beneficial, Torah is beneficial, period. Fine. Okay. That's as far as that goes. Two more points, and we'll be ready to move on. Just once we're discussing because of Torah, we should do it justice. So again, The Paiskim, of course, notes that we don't say Mitzivanu Lilmoy Divrei Torah. The term is not, we don't say Hashem Kedishamana Mitzvah, Mitzivanu Lilmoy Torah. Hashem commanded us to learn Torah. That's not what we say, or to study Torah. Hashem commanded us to engage in Torah. Right, that's, or in other words, La'asik, to toil in Torah. So a couple of points are being made here. Two sides of the coin. Maral says, first of all, what's being stressed here is that the mitzvah of Torah is not necessarily to come away understanding. If a person breaks his head over a sugya all day and just comes away confused, that day was a success. He's achieved. Because the mitzvah is to toil in Torah. Do your utmost. Work to understand it. Whether you will understand it or not, don't leave to Hashem. Your mitzvah is to toil. And therefore the toil is the fulfillment of the mitzvah. If you understood it, you got an added benefit. You're a lucky man.
Is it saying that if you went on a particular study for X amount of years and didn't see any more
fun, move on? What's that? It says if a person is engaging in Torah and he was not matzliach for 5 years, it's a simon that it's not for him. That is an almost unconceivable scenario. It doesn't mean guys who sit in yeshiva for 5 years and they say, learning is not for me. I'll just give an example. There was an incident with the stipler. But there was a guy in yeshiva. He wasn't doing well. After 5 years, the rabbanim in the yeshiva lost their patience. They decided they're going to cash in on the gemara that says, the Talmud is not matzliach in his learning for 5 years. It's not for him. So they figured they're going to, okay, they didn't encourage him to leave the yeshiva, go do something else with himself. So they went to the stipler to discuss it with him. The stipler said, bring the boy to me. Okay. They brought the boy. The boy had been in the yeshiva for 5 years. It means he must have been about 18 or something. The stipler sat the boy down. He opened up a Mishnah. Mishnayos. He said, read a Mishnah. Can you make out the Mishnah? The boy read the Mishnah. He made it out. Simple Mishnah. They opened up a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Some halacha. Can you read the halacha? The boy said, yeah. Made it out. The stipler said, were you able to do that before you entered the yeshiva? And the boy said, I don't think so. The stipler turned to the Rebbe in a fury. And he said, that's called no hatzlacha in learning? And you call yourself a Rebbe? And he threw them out. So it's a pretty inconceivable scenario. We have a lot of guys who aren't matzliach for 5 years, but it's because they have been in yeshiva not trying for 5 years. If a guy just sits in yeshiva not learning, can't come after yeshiva, doesn't say if you're in yeshiva for 5 years. It says if a person, loira'a simin bracha belimuda, he's been learning, and he hasn't been matzliach. It's almost an inconceivable scenario. If it would be, yes. But not practically. Okay, now the other side of this coin, the very same side of the coin is, and we understand that if the whole mitzvah is the toil and not the actual, necessarily, the actual success, what happens if you have a person who figures, I'm just going to opt for the easy stuff. I'm just going to opt for the easy stuff. I'm not going to bother myself with, you know, the more difficult sugyas, the more difficult masechtas. I'm going to opt for the easy stuff that I can sit back, relax, and just breeze through it. If we're saying that the whole mitzvah is toil, and therefore even if you didn't understand, you achieved great things, the other side of the coin is that if you understood an awful lot and you breezed through and you didn't put in much effort, you barely skimmed the mitzvah. The mitzvah is the toil. The mitzvah is the toil. It's the Taz, the Bach, and the Chazon Ish all write this. All the great things that it says about Torah, right? All the great rewards, etc., were not said necessarily about knowing Torah. They were said about toiling in Torah. That's the lashon of the Chazon Ish. Everything about the Torah, lo nemar elo alamolo, was said only about toil. Toil means breaking your head, taking the patience to try to dissect things you're having a hard time with. Another interesting thing that the Chazon Ish defines as the toil of Torah. He says, lachzor harbe pamim b'li chidush. Reviewing the same thing many times. It's boring, it's coming out of your ears. The Chazon Ish calls that, says that's what defines amal. It's boring. said the dvarim she'ein aseichel ne'ena mehem ela adarabah moyes bohem v'katz bohem, things that I am not enjoying at all. I've been through this already, I know it already, I'm reviewing it again to the extent that it's just making you nuts. So when a person does this, because Chazon Ish gives an interesting promise, he says, you do that, take a piece of Gemara, a significant piece, let's say 3-4 daf, review it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times, starting to come out of your ears, he says, all of a sudden, when you're already on the whatever is time, you're suddenly going to start discovering depth. Suddenly, he says, Niftachim loy shari oira. All of a sudden, you're going to start seeing new lights in the Gemara. Vasechel misaneg b'li kates. And then he says, the seichel starts enjoying infinitely. Whatever it is, that's his definition of amo. Reviewing again and again and again. I know this stuff already. And I'm tired of working out the details each time. It's tiring. That's the amo we're talking about. So la'asoik, it's the engagement. It's the making an asik out of it, the toiling. That's what the mitzvah is. The truth is, ultimately it comes together. So Rav Shana is asking a question, which is merely the next thing we have to address. How does this come together with what we just said, that the essence of Torah is to be enjoying it, right? That's the ultimate purpose. What we're saying, the whole point is the toil. How does it all come together? So the truth is that actually, here, this is just a fundamental understanding of humans in general. Adam la'amal yulam. Man is created to toil, which really means, and this is something that you see all around the world, Jews, non-Jews, spiritual, material, people, the happy people in the world, who are happy, it's the people who are working hard and enjoying it. They're gratified with the results of their efforts. That was called an enemy, Gia Kapo. People who are enjoying the fruits of their labors. The people who just make it, let's say, I don't know, an actor or something. He rolls into the millions. He's spending his life not working hard. They don't have a fulfillment in life. The real fun of life is fulfillment. When a person has something that he works hard at, comes to enjoy it, and comes to see fruit from what he's doing, that is a happy person. Guy, Jew, in the material level, in the spiritual level. Now the purpose of this is for us to connect with Ruchnius. That's what Ruchnius is all about. That's what Torah is all about. But that's how human beings are built in general. People who are not working hard are not enjoying life. They might be having a lot of fun. Fun and enjoying life does not necessarily go together. On the contrary, they desperately go looking for more things until they run out, then they start taking drugs, then they start, they go to desperate measures to try to find more fun without working hard. And then they commit suicide. This is what you see with a lot of these types. It's the people, the middle class, the people who are working hard and enjoying what they're working from, those are the people who have fun. This is what where it all comes together. When you toil in Torah, until you do understand it, and it happens again, and you gain deeper understanding because you reviewed it again, and you're enjoying, you're feeling gratified from it, this is the whole picture coming together. This is really the ultimate picture of how it's supposed to work. One last point. You know that I should feel.
Why don't more people who work hard feel that gratification? They feel exhausted and burnt out.
What's that?
Why don't most people feel, I think, the way you are describing?
It depends if you're enjoying the fruits of your labor or not. Enjoying the fruits of your labor doesn't necessarily just mean a salary. Let's say a person who worked hard to build up a business. A person who worked hard to build up his own business and gets it on the road. And then, it takes a lot of work to keep the business going, but the business is matzliach, is a happy person. Generally, if you look around the world, they're happy people. He might need vacations, he might exhaust himself, but he's a happy person in general. When you just have a person who's working in the warehouse, he's not getting any gratification from what he's doing, except the fact that from some other direction he gets a paycheck every week. That's not necessarily going to provide that. But it doesn't. You can have a person who works in the warehouse, but he also puts efforts into raising a family, working hard, seeing fruits of his labor. The ultimate happiness in the world comes from the hard work that produces fruit. That's what you see all around the world. It's certainly a rule in spirituality, but it's a rule in materialism too. Okay. Now, the last point is the way we end off the Birkas HaTorah. No, it's Sein HaTorah, the present tense. This is also something that all the place can pick up, all the Mefarshim pick up on. The present tense. We don't thank Hashem who gave us the Torah. We thank Hashem who gives us the Torah. And this is very much connected to what we were discussing before. And basically, all the Mefarshim say this in different terms. Hashem is giving the Torah all the time. When a person learns Torah and understands Torah, it's not that this text here, you worked at it and you understood it. We've already seen earlier. When you sit down to learn, you are engaging Hashem. That's what, right, we've quoted the Baal HaTanya. Baal HaTanya says, why is learning Torah called Kairei BaTorah? Kairei BaTorah seems like the wrong term. Because Kairei BaTorah means read. You don't read Torah, you learn it. The point is not to read. So he says, no, Kairei doesn't mean read. It's the other usage of Kairei. Call. Kairei means to call, right? When you sit down to learn Torah, you are calling Hashem. Kiviyachol, you're summoning Hashem. Hashem comes. In Hashem yiten chokhma mipiv da'as usmuna. Where does Torah come from? Torah comes from Hashem's mouth. When you sat down and learned the line of Gemara, Hashem just gave you a kiss. And He blew into you some of His Torah. You connected to it through the lines of the Gemara. But actually it was Hashem injecting you with Torah. That's how Torah works. So, Chazal say, for example, it says that by Har Sinai that there was a kol gadol v'lo yosof. The sounds at Har Sinai were very great voices that did not cease. Chazal say, so we understand, Pashto Pshat is usually when a person is talking loud, ultimately it dies down. At Har Sinai it didn't, it persisted. But Chazal say, lo yosof, it never stopped. The Aseret Hadibus and all of the Torah is still being articulated today. When you learn something, what you're actually doing is you are absorbing that articulation of Hashem that's being articulated right now. This is your personal, each of the 613 mitzvahs is being issued to each Jew in a personal way. You just have to hear it. When do you hear it? When you actually sit down. Now I'm going to absorb this mitzvah. Make yourself like a satellite, right? The satellite that shouldn't be on the roof of your house that absorbs all the waves. But we do this in a spiritual sense. It's there, it's up there. Hashem's commands are being articulated always. You just have to bring them in. It's nice and atari. It's giving to you in a personal way, all the time. Chazal expressed this in a few ways. Chazal also said, Al Dodeo Yerabucha Bechol Eis. Mishlei says about Torah, its breasts satiate you at all times. Meaning, a person is busy nursing the Torah directly from Hashem all the time when he's learning Torah. And the way the Gros says this, this is what will, the last point on this, he says something very interesting. Mi derabanan, right? We all wonder, how does derabanan fit into the whole scheme of Torah? Mi derabanan is the same gematria as mi pi gvura, from the mouth of the Almighty. That's mi derabanan. The going. Now, what this means is, here it doesn't mean derabanan in the sense of mitzvahs derabanan. It means derabanan in the sense of sages who are learning Torah, or us. People who are learning Torah are actually getting it mipi gvura all the time. This is a process going on all the time. So that's why we say noisen haTorah, who gives the Torah right now. Also, melame Torah lame Yisrael. He teaches Torah. It's not that he presented the Torah. He teaches Torah to his nation of Israel. You have to realize, you're sitting down to learn Torah, you are learning the Chavrusa, so to speak, with Hashem. And that's also why Chaim Volozhin says, it's part of what you should think about for a minute or two before you actually start learning. Think about what's about to happen right now. Okay. In order to be Yaitse, we're going to begin the next sugya, so people won't say that I just spent the time schmoozing. Okay. Let's begin. Besides, the sign outside said that there's more topics for this week, so Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, about 10 lines before it spreads, there's the two dots. Tanan Asam. We'll introduce the next sugya. Alright, you see that? Last word on the line is Tan, about 10 lines before it spreads. Tanan Hasam says in a Mishnah elsewhere, we're going to the Beis HaMikdash, we're going to the Minyan for Shachris in the Beis HaMikdash. Have the Minyan for Shachris work. Now, there wasn't much time for Shachris in the Beis HaMikdash because the Kehanim were very busy. And therefore, it took a very unique form. They had to squeeze in whatever davening they did, which was a very abbreviated version, as you're going to see soon. They had to squeeze it in at a certain break, where they were able to take a break in the avodah. Practically, the way this worked was, at Alois HaShachar, this is the earliest time, there's no davening before that, right? But at Alois HaShachar, they began immediately with the morning tamid. They slaughtered the tamid, they cut it up, and they threw the blood, they cut it up, they brought the pieces of the tamid to the altar, they salted it, then they took a shachris break. This was still a bit early in the morning, earlier than you're supposed to daven lechatchila, but since the kohanim are not going to have time, this is when they daven. Therefore, what's that? Earlier in Matzika. The kohanim themselves. There were two minyanim in the Beis HaMikdash, we'll get to that soon. There was the kohanim who davened earlier than Matzika. And therefore, people who are in the Beis HaMikdash spending the day were told not to daven with the kohanim. It says, people who daven with the kohanim didn't really daven right.
After
Alois HaShachar? Yeah. Yaitzeh b'di'evet. Right. Right. But the kohanim, this is the way they did it. Then they did their little davening, and then they got back into the avodah. They were busy basically till the end of the zmanim. There was no more davening for them. So now we're going to see exactly what. So what did they daven? Amar lehem ha-mimun. By the way, I'll note, you know where the minyan was? Did they have a shul in the Beis HaMikdash? You know where the minyan was? The minyan was in the Lishkas HaGozis. Lishkas HaGozis was where the Sanhedrin convened, right? It was a chamber off the Azara. Why there? We said that the best place to daven is in a place of Torah learning. Now we see the money being put where the mouth is in the greatest way. They left the Azara, the Beis HaMikdash, right? The Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash. Where do they daven? They go into the Beis Medrash. They go into where the Sanhedrin sit. That's where they daven. So that's a place of Torah. In the Beis HaMikdash was a place of Torah that was the preferred place to daven. So now, Amar lahem ha-mimune, the person in charge told them, Baruch Hu Brocha Achas. We don't have time for Yotzer Or and Ava Rabba. So just do one of them. Which one we'll see soon. But they only did one of the two. That's where davening started for them. Vein Baruch Hu, they said that one bracha. Vekaru Aseres HaDibros, they recited Aseres HaDibros. We don't have time for the rest of davening, but we're making insertions. They read Aseres HaDibros. What's that?
Did they wear tefillin?
Yeah, they wore tefillin all day. With there was room. The Kohanim's head left room for the Kohanim's hat left room for the tefillin. Right, so the Kohen Gadol had to have it worked out. The tzitz underneath, the head had a bit above, and the tefillin in between.
Did we get in the way of the
world? What's that? They dealt with it. Now, Vikar Aseres HaDibros. They recited the Aseres HaDibros. Shema, Vahayom Shemaya, Vahayomer. Okay. Then, Ubarchu Es Ha'am Gimel Brachas. They recited, along with the rest of the people, three brachas. This is all they're going to do. From after Shema, all of three brachas. Emes V'yatzim, that they said, right, Gal Yisrael. And now, there's no 18, 19 brachas. Two more brachas we have time for. Avoida, that's appropriate for the Kehanim. They said the bracha of the Avoida. Let's say, Hashem Aleikenu, Baam Chayisol V'Sfilosa. By the way, what did they say in the Beis HaMikdash? It's a chazen ha'inenu b'shum chalitzim b'rachamim. Baruch atah Hashem ha'machazir shkinot ha'litzim. How'd they end the bracha? They were there. What'd they say? The Rishonim give three possible endings of the bracha. One is what some of us actually say. There are some of us that say this by the before the duchening and the sholish yugalim. Baruch atah Hashem sha'oischo levadcho b'yiro na'avoid. That's how they ended off Ritzei. Ritzei is actually requesting that Hashem accept our avoida. Today we mean our tefillah. But then it was literal, requesting that Hashem accept the avoida. Baruch atah Hashem sha'oischo levadcho b'yiro na'avoid. We thank you, Hashem, the only one whom we will serve in fear. Another possibility is Hashem Tzion. Instead of Baruch Ata Hashem, blessed are you Hashem who will return His Shechina to Tzion, it's blessed are you Hashem who resides in Tzion. And the third possibility is Baruch Atah Hashem, Amikabel Avoida Samay Yisrael Berotzon. Blessed are you, Hashem, who accepts the service of his nation, Klal Yisrael, with pleasure. Okay, so whatever it is, they said Ritzay, which is very appropriate. They're davening for their service to be accepted. Well, Birkas Kayanim, that's also appropriate, isn't it? Birkas Kayanim. Well, B'Shabbos, that was it. That's the Shacharis. I was looking for an express menu. Just again, they didn't allow outsiders. But that was Shacharis. Shabbos was a longer davening. They had one more bracha. Ma'isifim bracha achas lemishmar ayetze. They added one more bracha. Shabbos was the changing of the guards, right? Shabbos was when they switched the shifts. So the shift that was leaving would say a bracha to the shift that's coming in. That is Shacharis for the Kehanim in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Now, this, as we'll see next time, this holds, we're going to study this carefully because there are a lot of nuances here that hold practical relevance for us in Halacha. But that we'll see next time, Be'ezus Hashem.